Fine. Good morning, everybody. We are in Parashat Shlach, which is on page 799. Parashat Shlach is a parasha that mainly discusses the famous story of the spies. It's a very difficult story to understand. It is explained by different commentaries in different ways. But before we start to go into the parsha and understand, according to our ability, what the story is all about, I want to say something about this generation in general. We have to understand that the generation of the people in the desert is the highest generation of Jewish people that ever existed. They are the foundation of the Jewish nation till today. To really understand all the tests that they went through, what was in their mind, why did they do what they did, why did Hashem react in the way he did, is totally beyond us. It's people that lived in a different sphere. They're on a totally different planet, we can say almost, right? And our way of understanding things, of evaluating things, our inner makeup is so different than theirs, that if the Torah would have told us exactly what took place then, what was really in their mind, we would not even be able to relate to it. Still, the Torah gives us the stories because every Jew on any level who learns this story can learn things that apply to his own life, because human beings are human beings and our makeup in general is the same. We are body and soul. We have thoughts, we have feelings, we have desires, we have different character traits that we are born with, that we are acquiring from our surrounding. So in principle, who we are and who they are is not very different. And being that this is the case, by learning it, we can learn things for ourselves. But we have to understand that even when we study it, and it seems to us that we understand the story, it's definitely a very superficial way of understanding, even though it sounds to us very deep, very superficial way to understand it, because to really understand who they are, we can't. They're beyond our grasp. So keeping this in mind, we are going into the story. Okay, so I want to go through some of the facts, ask a few questions, and then we'll start to understand it. So this story is written in the Torah in two places. And we need to read both places in order to start to understand what's taking place here. Okay, so first, in our next portion, and I'm reading the first two psukim. Hashem spoke to Moses, saying, "Send forth men, if you please, and let them spy out the land of Canaan that I give to the children of Israel." Okay, so how does the story start? Hashem speaks to Moshe. It sounds like a commandment. I am commanding you to do something. What do I command you to do? Appoint people. I send them to spy the land of Israel. At this point, the Jewish people are, after the giving of the Torah, after the golden calf, after the building of the Mishkan, they are ready now to enter the land of Israel. Right? So prior to it, Hashem tells Moshe, send people to spy the land. That's how it's written in our big portion. But if you go to Deuteronomy, when Moshe Rabbeinu discusses with the Jewish people past events in order to learn from them, it's before his death, 40 years down the line, right? He discusses with them previous events and learns lessons from all of them. This story is repeated. And I want to show you how it starts there. So we are in page number 943. The first chapter in Deuteronomy, okay, 9:43, and I'm starting to read verse number 19. We journeyed from Horeb, from Sinai, and we went through the entire great and awesome wilderness that you saw, by way of the Amorite mountain, as Hashem, our God, commanded us. Okay? And we came until Kadesh Barnea. So Kadesh Barnea is on the border, close to Israel. Then I said to you, you have come until the Amorite mountain, and Hashem, our God, gives us. See, Hashem, your God, has placed the land before you. Go up and possess, as Hashem, God of your forefathers, has spoken to you. Do not fear and do not lose resolve. So Moshe is inviting them to go into the land of Israel. They are on the border. Let's go in. Don't be afraid. Don't hesitate. We are going. Next pasuk. All of you approached me and said, let us send men ahead of us and let them spy out the land. Okay? And bring word back to us, the road on which we should ascend and the cities to which we should come. Okay? Very interesting. Two different beginnings. In our week's portion, Hashem commands to do it. In Deuteronomy, when Moshe rebukes the Jewish people, he tells the story differently. You approached me. And then, continuing in Deuteronomy, the idea was good in my eyes. Moshe liked it. So I took from you 12 men, and so on. Okay? And then he will also explain how they came and how it ended up in a difficult way. But it's very important to remember the beginning. You approached me. I told you, Hashem promised you the land. Go ahead, conquer it, right? Come in. And then you approached me and you suggested to appoint spies and to check the land. And it was good in my eyes. And I did it. So how do we resolve, right, the seemingly contradiction between the two? Let's go back to our week's portion, page 799. Whatever I'm saying now, we did in the past, but we'll explain it in a different way. So if you look at verse number 2, Hashem tells Moshe, send forth men if you please. It's not a commandment. Shlach lecha. Lecha means if you want. And Rashi explains that Hashem told Moshe, I told them that the land is good. But I give you permission to send the spies in order, and listen to this, that you won't inherit the land. Very interesting. Hashem said, go ahead, it's yours, right? I'm inviting you to come in. You asked for spies. Hashem tells Moshe, if you please, you can send the spies. But the result of it will be that they won't inherit the land. So if we are Moshe, and we are told by Hashem, if you wish, you can send the spies. But I told you it's good. If you do send the spies, they won't inherit it. Would you send them? Seems that not. Right? Doesn't make sense. We want them to enter the land, not stay where they are. So we are not going to tell them go if we know that going is going to prevent them from entering the land of Israel, as was at the end. Right? As we know, Moshe sent spies. They came back with the wrong information, but we'll soon go into, right? And they ended up staying in the desert for 40 years and only their children came into the land of Israel. So why does Moshe do it? More than this, if you look later on in verse number 16, it's written that Moshe called Hoshea bin Nun Yehoshua. 12 people were sent. one per tribe. Their names are mentioned here. We'll come back to the names in a minute. Among them, Yehoshua. Yehoshua at the time was called Hoshea, without the Yud in the beginning. And Moshe, before he went into the land of Israel, added the letter Yud to his name. And Yehoshua is a combination of two words. Yud and He is the name of Hashem, Ka. Yehoshia, Hashem will save you. Save you from what? From the ideas, from the plan of the spies. Now, this is another indication that Moshe knows that it won't end up in the right way. So if this is the case, why does he send them if Hashem tells him, if you want, if you please, you don't have to, only if you please. So what's going on here? And if Hashem doesn't want it to happen, he should tell Moshe, no. You asked me to send them, I'm telling you no. So not Hashem, not Moshe saying no. They approached Moshe first, and only then Hashem spoke to Moshe and said, if you please. And we don't understand what's taking place. That's one thing. Let's go back to the names. Who is sent? So let's look in verse number 2. The Torah says, one man, each from his father's tribe, shall you send, everyone a leader among them. So it's not simple people that are sent. It's leaders. Now, leaders, heads of tribes, are discussed many times in the Torah. For example, when Hashem discusses in the beginning of this book, the beginning of Bamidbar, the camping in the desert, we are told where each tribe encamps and who is the head of the tribe. When the heads of the tribes brought offerings at the day of the inauguration of the Mishkan, of the tabernacle, volunteeringly, their names are mentioned. But none of these names match the names that we have in other places. Not the same people. So it has to be leaders, but it's not the heads of tribes. So who are they? And why not to send the heads of tribes? The heads of the tribes are the greatest people. If the mission is a risky mission and we are afraid of negative consequences, why not to take the most known as righteous and send them? So it's no people. Besides Yoshua and Caleb, we never heard the names of the rest. Only in this particular story. There is another difference here. When the Torah counts the heads of tribes, the Torah just said, these are the heads of tribes. Here there is a word in English 3 or 2 that is added. Kol nasi, every leader, bahem, among them. Why is it added among them? Right? What is it all about? Obviously, it's not the tops, but they are important people, they are leaders, and they are among them. The Torah gives us a key to the understanding, and we have to see how does it lead us to the answer. But let's go further in the story, ask a few more questions, and then we'll answer all the questions together when we understand the story. Okay? So Moshe tells them what to look for. He gives them instructions. He wants to know everything about the land, about the fruits of the land, the people of the land, the cities, are they fortified, not fortified. He gives them a very detailed list of what to find out. And they go in order to find out. Okay? Now, they are told something very interesting. When Moshe tells them to go, he adds a verb. I want you to look in verse number 20. He says, strengthen yourself and take from the fruit of the land. Strengthen yourself. What is this request to strengthen themselves doing here? He sends them on a mission. Go do it. What's the call to strengthen themselves? So obviously it will be a challenge. And he tells them, you know, strengthen yourself. Okay. So then we have a description, right, of the fact that they come into the land of Israel and they come to the place of Hebron in verse number 22. But something very interesting. The beginning of the Pasuk is in the plural, Vayaalu, they went up. And then it's written, Vayavo at Hebron, and he came till Hebron. Who is the he? All of them went to Hebron, and he, right? All of them went up, and he went to Hebron. Who is the he? So Rashi brings that the only one who went to Hebron was Caleb, and he went to the place of burial of Avraham, Yitzchak, Yaakov, Sarah, Rivka, Rachel, and Leah, Ma'arat HaMachpelah, and he prayed them, prayed there that Hashem will give them the strength that Moshe is speaking about, and that he'll be able to come back and give the right report. So obviously he felt also that something is wrong. Okay? Yoshua didn't go there. And Yoshua still came back with the right report. But Caleb did. And we'll have to understand this as well. Okay? They come back and they give the report. It seems that they say exactly what Moshe told them, bring the information that they were requested to bring to the detail. And then Caleb makes them quiet in verse number 30, page 803. Caleb silenced the people, told Moses, and said, "We shall surely ascend and conquer it, for we can surely do it." Why does he have to say it? They came, they gave the information that they were asked for, right? Why this? Why does he have to tell them, of course we can go and, you know, do what we want? After he said this words, the spies started now to speak against going up to the land. Up till now, they just gave the information. The remark of Caleb, "We are able to go and conquer," this is what causes Caleb to say, causes them to say that the land is consuming its inhabitants and it's there are giant people there. We will not be able to do it. Okay? And then everybody, the whole nation is crying. Okay? We'll stop here before the reaction of Moshe and the reaction of Hashem, but that's the story itself at the beginning. Okay? Or maybe let's add some more. Okay? They complained and they said, "We would prefer to go back to Mitzrayim. Why did you bring us here to die in the desert? Okay? We would prefer to go back to Mitzrayim." Very difficult story to understand. So let's try to see what it is all about and what's taking place. In order to understand it, let's start from the very beginning. A nation that is for 210 years in Egypt. Then they have an unbelievable year of 10 plagues with amazing miracles performed in front of them. Then comes the night of Pesach and Hashem reveals himself to them. They experience the revelation. They come up miraculously of Mitzrayim. Then, as we know, they come to Yam Suf and again miraculously cross the Yam, cross the sea. Then they are walking towards Har Sinai and receive the Torah. What took place from the moment that Moshe started to bring upon the Egyptians the plagues till the splitting of the Red Sea was unbelievable. Not only did they see open miracles, they had revelations at the night of Pesach and on Yam Suf. As a result of it, the Jewish people were so full of gratitude and so elated and so connected to Hashem that they said the famous songs that we say every day in prayer, still today, every morning. So that's a very wonderful period of time. Wonderful period of time. But if we go to see what happened since then, till the point of our story. They received the Torah on the first year of coming out of Mitzrayim, just 49 days later, the 50th day, right? So it's the first year after coming out of Mitzrayim. They were next to Mount Sinai for over a year. Over a year. And now they are told, walk towards the land of Israel. What happened in this one year, right? Along the journey from Mitzrayim till this point. In a year and a month, from the 15th day of Nisan till they are leaving Mount Sinai, as it's written, right? That it was around a year later. All the stories that are written before happened before. What happened? They came out of Mitzrayim, okay? And I want to give you a list of things that happened. Okay. So they went for 3 days and there was no water. They were very thirsty. That's number one. Then they came to Mara, a place called Mara, and there was water there, but it was bitter. You couldn't drink it. Hashem performed the miracle and it became sweet, but to start with, it's bitter. There is no way to drink. So 2 times there was nothing to drink. Hashem performed miracles, but they were challenged, no water. Later on, when they came to Midbar Sin on the journey, the food they brought out of Mitzrayim ended. They left hurriedly, right? They took as much as they could, but it ended. So now they don't have what to eat. Later on, Hashem gave them manna, right? The man, and obviously they ate it. But another challenge, no food, what now? Later on, when they got the man, it was also not so simple. Because the man fell sometimes next to the door and cooked and ready for food, for eating, ready to eat. This was when the person behaved the previous day properly. So it came to his door in a ready way. If he wasn't so good yesterday, based on his high level, it was a little further. And the man did some work before eating. And if he really did something wrong yesterday, it was very far, and a lot of work was demanded in order to get it ready for food. And every day they had only for 1 day. So when they went to sleep, the refrigerator was empty. It is not so simple, right? Day after day, day after day. Again, a lot of challenges. Okay, later on, they came to Rephidim, another place, and again, there was no water. Okay, then there was the war with Amalek. Then was the Chet HaEgel, the golden calf, Moshe Rabbeinu disappeared. Their leader that they rely on, and who made sure at each of those tests that it ended up positively, that connected between them and Hashem, expressed their complaint, and Hashem via him provided what they asked for is gone. So obviously, it's not so simple. Finally, Hashem forgives them for the golden calf and tells them, build a tabernacle. They finish building it on Hanukkah. But till Nisan, for 3 months, they were not told to build it. And they felt horrible. It means Hashem doesn't accept us. He doesn't want to dwell in the midst of us. The Mishkan was already finally established, erected. Hashem commanded on the first day of Nisan to do it, right? And it's already Baruch Hashem standing, meaning, yes, Hashem is in the midst of us. And what happened on this day? Nadav and Avihu done. All of this in 1 year. That's not simple. And even though they had definitely a miraculous existence all along, But they were challenged constantly, constantly, constantly. And that's not silly. So when people go through a time like this, what do they want? Deep down in their heart. Just put us in a normal way of life. It's too difficult. It's too hard. We have to be on our toes constantly. And we constantly feel that we cannot live up to what is demanded of us. A punishment here, a punishment there, a change here, a change there. Amalek is coming. We are now mortal again. We were immortal. Everything in 1 year. Very, very hard. This answers the major question that we ask. The Jewish people somehow are afraid to go into the land of Israel. It's not by an accident that Moshe says, Hashem told you, go, conquer, don't be afraid. To whom do you say, don't be afraid? To somebody who is afraid. If he's not afraid, you don't have to tell him, don't be afraid. They were afraid to enter the land of Israel. And commentaries ask a very obvious question. Hashem told the Jewish people at the night of Pesach, come after me to the desert. The desert. No food, no water, scorpions, snakes. They didn't ask, didn't say a word. They ran after Hashem without asking. As Yirmiyahu says in his prophecies, Jeremiah, he says, Zacharti lach ezed neuraich. I remember the kindness that you did with me in the beginning of your history when you came out of Egypt, that you went into a land that has nothing in it and you didn't ask any questions. You did it willingly. Now, they are standing in front of the land of Israel. It's a land of milk and honey. Now they say, we are afraid. You weren't afraid to go to the desert. And now you are afraid to go to the land of Israel. How is it? Right? That's basically question number one. Why did you come to me and say we want to send spies? Obviously, you are not sure. Why aren't you sure? You are people on a very high level, running into the desert after Hashem. What stops you here? So I want to bring a parable that will explain it. Let's assume that a simple person who lives in a remote village is coming to the palace. And for whatever reason, he is treated there like royalty. A, he sees the palace. He never saw something like this in his life. He serves food. He's sitting with the king and his family by the table. And everything is unbelievable. Obviously, it's an euphoric experience. He'll be freed. He'll be so happy. But at the same time, being that he's a villager, he'll have some hesitation or some fear as well. Because he doesn't know how to behave in a palace. He didn't grow up with nobility. He's a plain person who has the manners of a farmer, of a simpleton, not of royalty. So even though he is there and he enjoys the experience on an unbelievable level, he's still also cautious and somewhat afraid. Now let's imagine that at that time, after, let's say, a few days that he's in the palace, the king tells him, I invite you to live here, to be part of the palace. You are invited to be here. Let's make this your permanent place. He'll most probably say, oh no, send me back to my village. It's too frightening. It's too awesome. It's too demanding to be in the palace. You have to act certain ways. And if you want, it will be embarrassing for the king. It will be considered not respecting royalty. And there will be consequences that he won't be able to live in. What did the Jewish people see in this year, based on what we described? In the beginning, they came out of Egypt On this night, they had a revelation of Hashem. They saw the king. Then on Yam Suf, they saw him even more. Hashem gave them food from above, water from the well, ananei kavod, clouds that surround them and protect them, an unbelievable experience. But their people came out of Egypt. They were in 49 gates of impurity. They are very scared. And they see many consequences of misbehavior. It was a very high generation. Very, very high generation. And they understood what does it mean to do something that the king, that is not proper to do in front of the king. But the experience was unbelievable, and they said a song. But then when a year starts, this challenge after challenge after challenge after challenge, and there are consequences when they don't do the right thing, they understand that this is creating a relationship with Hashem. But they don't feel that they can live up to this tension and to this way for too long. Especially when the Mishkan was built and the presence of Hashem was with them on an ongoing basis. Not just, you know, a short time, the night of Pesach, Yom Suf. Now Hashem is in the midst of them on an ongoing basis. You are in the palace, you have to behave a certain way. And all the tests that were put in front of them, some of them they did not pass, indicated to them that it's not simple. And they were afraid to enter the land of Israel. Because the land of Israel is the palace of the king. The land of Israel is not like any other land. If a person doesn't do the will of Hashem in the land of Israel, he will be punished quicker and in a more severe way than if he does it outside of the land of Israel. In fact, there was a group of people in Shomron that are called Gerei Arayot, converts of the lions. They converted and didn't behave the way one should, and lions attacked them. And it's explained that the reason was, even though they behaved not properly before too, because they were in the land of Israel. If you're in the land of Israel, you're in the palace, a certain way of behavior is demanded of you. And they wanted to check, can they live up to this level that the land demands? Now, they were afraid to come to Moshe and to say, we don't want to go to the land of Israel. They also knew that this is the land that is for them, assigned by Hashem for them. Hashem said it to Moshe the first time that he revealed himself to him. He told him, go to Pharaoh, tell him, send my people out because I want to bring them to the land of milk and honey. Right? So it's obvious that that's where they are heading. But after what happened, since Moshe spoke to Pharaoh, till this point, they are not sure that they can be there and succeed. They want to check, being that they know that it's a land designated for them and they are a holy nation. And the land of Israel is a holy place, a place with spiritual potential that does not exist in any other place. It's the palace of the king. They want to know, are we capable of living up to what this land will demand? Now Moshe told them, go. But they felt, okay, Moshe can. Moshe is an angel. Aharon can. He's like Moshe. Not in prophecy, but in righteousness. He's a very elevated person. The heads of the tribes, when they were appointed, and the 70 elders that were the leaders of the Jewish people that were appointed by Moshe, were given from his spirit. He bestowed them, Hashem told him, bestowed upon them some of his greatness. So they said, these are people who can do it. But they wanted to know, can we live after it? What if not? They cannot stay in the desert, that's obvious. So what if not? What are the options? To stay in the desert, you can't. This is not a permanent place. The option is to go back to Egypt, to work harder till they come to the level that they can do it. Why did they think it will be the right solution? Because originally the Jewish people had to be in Egypt for 400 years and prepare. They came out after 210, so they felt they missed in the preparation. And being that they were very great people, and they feared a sin, they feared wrongdoings way, way beyond what we today feel wrongdoings, because they knew Hashem in a way that we don't, on a level that we don't. And everything that is against the will of Hashem frightened them terribly. So they were ready to go back to Mitzrayim for another 190 years, prepare better, and then go to the land of Israel. So when they said, let's go back to Egypt, it was not a complaint. It was not saying, Hashem wants the bad things for us. No, the land of Israel is the best. But we can't. We are not yet ready. Okay. So, what's the solution? On their side, they said, we want to check it. Let's take spies. Not the greatest, those who are close in level to Moshe, Aharon. They can handle it, this we know. But we want 12 people from the midst of us. You remember the difficulty? Why is it written, leaders from the midst of us? Nowhere it's written. And why do we have here people that we never heard about? Because they don't want the famous top that can handle it. Still leaders. We know that Yitro gave Moshe advice to appoint people that will help him in leadership, and there were different levels. There were those who were appointed over 50 people, those over 100 people, those over 1,000 people, 10,000 people. So from those people who are definitely leaders and righteous people, but closer to the level of the nation as a whole, if they will go to the land of Israel, and they will come back and they will say, it's possible. They'll go. They'll go happily. But if they will come back and say, we couldn't handle it, the nation will not be ready to go. They'll say it's not for the benefit of anybody. We don't want to go. So that's the purpose of the Jewish people coming to Moshe and asking to appoint spies. So they are not wicked people. They are people who care about the relationship with Hashem, and they want to succeed spiritually. And they don't feel that they can do it without checking. So they came to Moshe. Now Moshe knew and felt. Hashem said, go. So obviously you can. Still Hashem tells him, send people if you please. Hashem gives him the option. Why? And even though Moshe knows that it won't end up properly, he takes the option. He takes the option. And he says, go. Why? Imagine Moshe says, no, we don't need spies. Hashem said, go, and they go. But basically, it's forcing them to go. They don't want it. Inside, they don't want it. They express the fact that they are afraid. So if a person is afraid and doesn't want to go, and you force him to go by the commandment of Hashem, if Hashem would have said go anyhow, they would. They won't do something against the will of Hashem. But in this case, they'll be so frightened that they will really not succeed. Because the land of Israel is not a regular land. It is the palace of the king. And you have to work hard in order to deserve it and grow via it and fulfill the mission that comes with coming, with going into the land of Israel. But if Hashem said go, obviously they have the potential inside them, but it won't be easy. But if they are forced to go against their will, they fail. And if they will fail, they won't deserve the land. So Hashem will have to expel them from the land. That's not a good option. So Moshe says go. He tries to encourage them. Ve'hit chazaktem, strengthen yourself. But he knows it's not simple. And he knows they'll come back and they won't feel ready. As a result of it, they got 40 years in the desert. 40 years of training and growth that will make the next generation ready. And the next generation will enter the land of Israel after 40 more years with Moshe and Aaron and Miriam and will be trained spiritually. They'll go into the land of Israel very happily. There were other things that made them frightened. They are told before in the Torah that two people, Eldad and Medad, said prophecy, got prophecy, and they said it. What was their prophecy? Moshe will die, and Yehoshua will lead us into the land of Israel. Moshe will die? Even without Moshe, we have to go in? How could we? Even with Moshe, it's so difficult. Now, they still didn't know that there will be a story of the spies, and as a result of it, Moshe will not go in. Later on, May Meriva, right, and as a result, Moshe will not go in. All they hear is this statement, Moshe will not go in with you. Obviously, they are afraid, even more. And another factor. It's right after the story of Miriam, who spoke against Moshe, Lashon around Moshe, and became and got Sarat. So they said, see, even Miriam is punished. Even she cannot succeed. So what will be with us? Now, interestingly enough, in all other cases that the Jewish people didn't do the right thing in the desert, Moshe prayed for them and Hashem forgave. This story is different. Moshe did not pray that Hashem will forgive them. Moshe just said, it will be a desecration of the name of God if they will die in the desert. Because if you remember, when Moshe came to Pharaoh in one of the plagues, he told them, I see in astrology, blood on your way. You'll die in the desert. Don't go. So said Moshe, if now they will die, all of them in the desert, Pharaoh will say, I said so. I know. And it will be a desecration of the name of Hashem. It will look as if the plan of Hashem did not work out. So Moshe didn't even ask for forgiveness. Why? Because he felt they are not ready for forgiveness. The point here is not forgiveness. The point is making them ready to enter the land of Israel. And for this, they need more training. Not by going back to Mitzrayim. This is not an option. It's a place of impurity. Thank God they are out of there. But 40 more years in the desert of training, of growing, of strengthening themselves. Now, let's go back to Kalev. Why did he go to Hebron? Why not Yoshua? Why did the people agree all together? Then Kalev and Yehoshua, who are two very great people, will be among the 12. We said they wanted people like them, right? People on the lower level. They felt if Yehoshua goes with them, Moshe will be okay with it. He's a student, he's very close to him. And Caleb was the husband of Miriam. So they felt this will give legitimacy to the mission. They accepted. Yehoshua, being that he was so loyal to Moshe, and that he accepted everything that Moshe said without hesitation, was okay. Moshe also prayed for him, right? Added the name to him. Caleb in the beginning felt like them. But when they came close to Hebron, he had a change of mind. Over there, they saw the giant people, the Torah says. Very, very tall, powerful people. And he felt that's the place that Hashem sends them to. It must be that they can overcome it. They feel they can't. He had a response to it. He went to the place of burial of Avraham, Yitzchak, Yaakov, and the Imahot, the matriarchs, and he prayed there, and he said, I am a descendant of them. Let's look at them. Avraham went to a war against four mighty empires, as it's described in Bereshit, and he won the war. They are different people. If we will tap into our potential, we'll be successful. This was his turning point. Hebron, learning from Avraham, Yitzchak, and Yaakov. And that's why he came back and fought against the spies. He said, we can. Even if Hashem will tell us, go up to Shamayim, we'll be able to. Because if he tells us to go, it means he gave us the potential. And this is basically what the Jewish people had to believe, but it was very, very hard after a year like this. Okay. So what do we see at the bottom line of this story? Hashem tells the Jewish people, go. When they left Egypt, they did it happily. They're in front of the land of Israel after a very challenging year. They say, we can't handle it. What they lacked was the belief in their strengths. And they believe that if they will do what they can, Hashem will be with them and they will succeed. They will succeed. They could not believe that they can fulfill what Hashem wants to accomplish via them. Hashem wanting them to come to the land of Israel, to live what is considered a normal life. Normal life, to work, to make a living, to eat and drink normal food, right? Normal waters that come from a well, not from a miracle. To have homes that will protect them, not clouds. Why was it important? Why shouldn't they stay in the same stage as they were in the desert? Live on miracles. After all, nature is also a miracle. Because the Jewish people have a double mission. A, to connect themselves to Hashem fully and completely, to become one with Hashem, and to bring all other nations to Hashem. If we would have stayed in the desert, isolated from the rest of the world, and live on open miracles, the other nations won't be able to relate to us. They'll look at us as a phenomenon that has nothing to do with them, and they won't be able to learn from us and come to the belief in Hashem through us, by us. But if we'll go into the land of Israel and externally, we live the same life as any other nation. We have a land, I'm sorry, we have a language, we have an army, we eat, we drink, we work like any other nation, but we'll be an exemplary society in terms of behavior, in terms of our connection to Hashem. And miracles will happen to us, even in the land of Israel, as they did later on in the Beit HaMikdash, there were 10 open miracles. Each time that we went to Jerusalem 3 times a year, nobody touched our land. Nobody came into our homes to steal, to rob it. There were constant miracles. We've conquered the land with open miracles, but still we were what we can call normal. Eating, drinking, having a land like anybody else. Then they would be able to relate to us also and via us, learn from us and connect to Hashem. More than this, we were created to connect to Hashem, everything and anything, even the most physical. Even the land, we have to connect to Hashem. The fruits, we have to connect to Hashem. The animals, we have to connect to Hashem. The constellations, we have to connect to Hashem. Everything that we use, that exists, and we use it in order to do mitzvot, we connect to Hashem. And that's our mission. It's not easy, but it's unbelievable. This generation was such a great generation that they were afraid of failure. That's why they needed more training. And that's why the story took the place the way it is. Now, I said before, it's a story of very great people. Very, very great people, even according to this understanding that we do understand. To this explanation that we do understand. And as I said before, what really took place there is beyond us. But what do we learn from it? I saw two beautiful things regarding this story, one from the Chidushei Arim and one from the Ozer Vorim. They're referring to seemingly minor things, but it's amazing. The Chidushei Arim says, before Mashiach comes, to succeed spiritually won't be easy. In fact, that the war of Gog and Magog will be a spiritual war, not a physical one. A very challenging spiritual war. And winning the war means overcoming the spiritual challenges. It will be hard, very, very, very hard. So how could we win? So the Chidushei Arim says, it will be a generation, our sages say, where chutzpah will be very common. So the pshat level is, people will really be full of chutzpah. And we see it today, right? Young people don't accept the authority of older people, parents, children have challenges that weren't in previous generations. Right, the way of speaking to parents and whatever, there is a lot of chutzpah. Speaking to teachers, a lot of chutzpah. But the Chidushei Arim speaks about the inner chutzpah. He says the Yetzer Hara will be very blunt, very strong, very chutzpahdik. He'll dare to come to us in ways that are terrible. So how will we overcome? Interestingly enough, he gives the advice that Kalev took. We have to tell that inclination. Don't fight me. Don't think you can win. I am the son, the daughter of Avraham, Yitzchak, Yaakov, Sarah, Rivka, Rachel, and Leah. And this should strengthen us, and we should overcome. Meaning we have to remember what potential do we have inside from our forefathers, from our matriarchs. And say, we really can. And if I believe that I can, then I can. The problem of this generation was that they thought that they can't, and that's why they failed. That's the insight of the Chidushei Arim, the first Gerer Rebbe. What's the insight of the Ozer of the Rebbe? It says as follows. They said, we are not going to accomplish what Hashem wants to accomplish in this land. We can't do it. He said, we are in a generation that it seems to us that we are not going to bring a Mashiach. We, all the previous generations that were so great and so strong spiritually, did not bring the Mashiach. And we will. What do we base it on? He said, what did the Meraglim, the spies, the Jewish people, had to base themselves upon and go to the land of Israel? It's the belief in what Hashem said. Hashem said, go. If Hashem said, go and you can. Hashem said, we will bring Mashiach. Not the generation of Rabbi Akiva. Not the generation of Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai. Not the generation of Shlomo HaMelech even brought Mashiach. And we are told that a generation, where there will be a lot of chutzpah, when there will be so many problems, this is the generation that will bring Mashiach. We have to believe Hashem. And if we believe Hashem, we'll find in ourselves the strength to tell the bad inclination, please, stay aside. We are the children of Abraham, Yitzchak, and Yaakov, and we can. This will give us what Moshe Rabbeinu told these people, Veitchazaktem, strengthen yourself. And if you strengthen yourself, you can take the potentials that you have, each one of us, the potentials that was given to us, and actualize it fully. And that's all that is demanded of us. We are not supposed to be Moshe Rabbeinu. We are not supposed to be the generation of the desert. Each one of us is supposed to be what we have in potential, to actualize what we have in potential. And if we do it, we will be the generations that will bring Mashiach. And that's one of the lessons that we learn from the story of the spies. Don't hesitate. Don't say, I know Mashiach will come. I can see him come now. See this problem, this problem, this reality, this reality. Is this a generation for Mashiach? Yes, this is a generation for Mashiach. The same way that they said, are we able to go to the land of Israel? Yes, you can. If Hashem assigns you to it, you can. We just have to do one thing, to strengthen ourselves, to believe that we are the children of Avraham, Yitzhak, Yaakov, Sarah, Rivka, Rachel, and Leah, and we have the capability. Otherwise, Hashem would have not assigned us to this job. Okay, let's hope that it will happen soon. Any questions?
Before we open up for questions, the class is Le'ilu Nishmas, Me'ira Chaya Nechama Bracha, Bas David Mordechai. And you should be able to unmute yourselves.
Hi, Rebbetzin. Would you be able to just repeat? I missed what you said about the Chidushei Harim's explanation. Would you be able to just repeat it? Thank you.
Yeah. What he said is that the bad inclination will be very powerful at this time, meaning we'll face challenges that are really not easy to overcome. How do we do it? He said, if we believe strongly and tell our bad inclination, meaning tell ourselves, you are the daughter of Avraham, Yitzchak, Yaakov, Sarah, Rivka, Rachel, and Leah. These are people that in their lives they achieved in a time that was very difficult. Avraham Avinu, the whole world worshiped idols, right? And he was able to do whatever he did. We have this potential too. And we are not asked to be Avraham Avinu. Every one of us is asked to become who he can become. And we have to believe that we can do it, strengthen ourselves by it. And in this way, to silence the bad inclination, who tries to tell us we can't. It won't happen in such a generation. How? Right? Yeah, it is. It will. And we will be those who will bring in. If we only believe that the same way that Avraham, Yitzhak, Yaakov did it, we can too. Same way as Kalev did, right?
Wow.
That's what he connects it to.
Wow, what an empowering lesson. Thank you, thank you.
Sure. Anybody else? Okay, so we'll see each other in Yad Vashem next week. Kol Tov.